right, welcome on in. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. It is a good Tuesday. There is a lot that is on my mind on today's show. Peter King is going to join us, and we're going to Skype Peter. Now, this could go horribly. I'm just telling you that right off the top. Peter is in New York, Eric. Is that the deal?
Yes. Yeah, he's hanging out in his palatial,
In his man cave. Does Peter
downtown,
King have a man cave?
Downtown studio apartment. It's probably not a studio, knowing Peter King, but his residence in New York City.
Do you think he has a man cave?
Probably has an office. He strikes me more as like an office guy.
Very efficient. Well, he's sitting there on NBC doing his thing, and the MMQB. Peter joins us every week. SI.com senior NFL writer Peter King. That's in about 12 minutes from now. Chris Cartman in studio. SunDevilSource.com publisher. It's time to let's just have a conversation here about what has been a brutal season. If you're an Arizona State fan, on one hand, I've had some people that have been in the damage control business in the last 24 hours said you're being entirely too harsh when you realize that they've lost to Utah and USC and Texas A&M. And pointing out that I have said on the air USC is better than Utah, and I think even Vegas knows that. Vegas has USC listed as a three-point favorite in their game against Utah this week. Get Utah out of Salt Lake City, and I think they're a different team. You know, Oregon, yeah, I saw what happened in Oregon. But I think Oregon is not what they're all cracked up to be. So we're going to have a Rich Rod moment here in a moment, too. Rich Rod moment in a moment. I can go deeper than that. We're going to hear from Rich Rodriguez here in a moment. Because I have said all season long they've been up against the eight ball by not having a bye week. And, of course, ASU fans don't want to hear that. They just think I'm making excuses. And, look, I don't have allegiance one way or another. I don't care. But I think he has a very valid point about how U of A has gotten screwed over by the schedule. They got the 8 o'clock game next Saturday in Seattle. Last year, we've done this now for 4 years, okay? We always have a draw, or we fight, or we thumb wrestle, or we just choose sides over road trips. Last year, I was the guy that decided to go to Corvallis in Seattle just because I hadn't been to Corvallis in a while. And they have a new Dutch Bros there, and I figured, well, why not? That game was just awful, just dreadful. And the game at Seattle for Arizona State last year was beyond just undescribable. I know they won, but it was freezing. It was windy. The bridge was closed back to Bellevue. The game had power outages. It was just a miserable night.
Isn't it interesting how teams from the South go up to the North and how the weather and the time of game just completely balances the playing field? Like, you'll get a really talented ASU team that will go up and play an average at best Oregon State team, and Oregon State will beat them. Why? Because the game starts at like 9:30 Arizona time, p.m. It's misting and like 42 degrees.
You're on the road. You're in Corvallis.
You're on the road. Yeah. And honestly, like, ASU just didn't look interested to play that game last year.
No. But see, I think Rich has got a good point here.
For sure.
And we're going to talk about this in a minute. I mean, the story last night, I was between the baseball playoffs last night. And by the way, I am all in on Cubs-Mets today. All in on that. It's 70 degrees today in Chicago. There's some wind. Pedro will be with us tomorrow for our weekly segment. Pedro Gomez from ESPN joins us every week. The Mets have got DeGrom going tonight at Wrigley Field. And yet, when I see Joe Maddon, I see a competent manager, very good manager. And I want to see the Cubs win tonight. I'm rooting. I don't root often, but I am rooting for the Cubs to win tonight. And he's throwing Kyle Hendricks out there. I don't know why he's throwing Hendricks, but he is. But I watched some of Toronto, Kansas City last night. The Eagles Giants set the world back years in the way that the football was being played in the first half. I mean, it was just a train wreck. It was two bad teams. And it's on national television. There's penalties and drop balls and mistakes. And Gruden and Tirico sound disgusted that they're watching this slop. But everybody was trying to get towards the Star Wars trailer. And because we do movie stuff here, because guys like movies, if you missed it last night, here it is, because it's coming up soon. And that was the only reason at all to watch last night. Was the Star Wars trailer. So here it is. So as I'm watching Monday Night Football last night, the halftime show, I couldn't wait. I was over at the baseball game because, again, the football game was just garbage last night. It was just not good.
My wife made a great point last night during the football game. She said, I'd love to see the spike of people on ESPN as the game got towards halftime and then the downward spike after the trailer played.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have to think, it was probably, you know, Monday Night Football always is going to do a really good number.
It'll do a good
obviously,
number, sure.
Even with the baseball playoffs going on.
Yeah.
But so there was so much buzz on Twitter all day, and even during the game leading up to the trailer. As soon as the trailer ended and the game, which was pretty bad, I'm sure people are like, yeah, bye.
I was. I mean, I
we
went
watched
back
a little bit of it, and then we turned it off.
I went back just because, you know, I have to talk about this stuff, even when it's crap. And it was bad last night. It was just bad football.
We had a couple Dateline NBCs on the DVR, so yeah. We pounded through those.
But no, the numbers, the part of I'm watching Harrison Ford, and Harrison Ford was in 42, and I went out and I did a thing, well, that's when I saw Channel 3, and I did a sit down with Harrison Ford, and he was very nice. Larry King was actually standing there, and it was a moment where it's Larry King, Harrison Ford, and myself. One of us didn't belong there. And it
Larry
was,
King wasn't sitting front row behind the at Dodger Stadium in the very, very, very front row for a playoff game like he is every time. Or
what
was
cool about this, Eric, is so we go to these movie screens, and I've got one coming up, I've got two coming up, and I'm thinking of sending Jordan to go do the Sylvester Stallone one because the movie looks dreadful. It's about Apollo Creed. It's called Creed, and Stallone's in it. So I can get Stallone, and I'm thinking Jordan should go do it. I'm going to go do Concussion, and I'm going to go get Will Smith, and I'm going to get everybody in Concussion, and it's going to be great, and we'll bring it back. We'll put it all in the air here. But when we did 42, so there's like 15 of us from around the country that are flown in for this deal. And actually, I wasn't at three. I was here. This was just a couple of years ago. And so we go see the movie. We go to a Dodger game after and then we go see the movie. The next day, we go to Dodger Stadium and there's nobody there, just the 15 of us. But there's some national people that are there to sit down and do interviews with Harrison Ford. And Larry King happened to be one of those people. And you know me long enough to know that whenever I start something new, we didn't do it with this, but I usually have Larry King as the first guest because he's so good and so impactful and is still relevant in what he's doing. And so I walk up to him, I introduce myself, and I said, I've had you on before. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So we're standing there with Harrison Ford, and here's Larry King and Harrison Ford going back and forth, and they were great. And then I sit down, and Matt Kemp was there. Matt Kemp was part of the interview thing. And Harrison Ford was okay, and then he got a little spindly and tingly with me because I said, how is it you've played Branch Rickey? How important was it for you to get this right because you weren't Indiana Jones and you weren't Han Solo? Well, I can do all sorts of things, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It was fine. It's fine. So when I see him, I get a little tingly there.
The trailer was very well done because
sure,
like you saw the familiar faces, but they really didn't dig too deep into the plot, which makes you want to see the movie even more now. So
before we get to the break, because I know Peter's coming up via Skype. So here's Rich Rodriguez. I want to get over to this. This caught my ear and caught my eye because it showed up yesterday quite a bit on Twitter. Arizona, I said this 3 weeks ago, they are hitting a soft part in their schedule and they still have, they control their own destiny. This was 3 weeks ago because they will finish with USC, Utah, and Arizona State. And if Rich Rod can get it together down there and make it through not having a bye week, and you know, the ASU fans, oh, well, it's just a lame excuse. I don't know. You guys are pretty fortunate. You have a bye after what you just went through up in Utah. So it goes, you need to have a bye. I don't know why that happened. But then they get saddled with the 8 o'clock game at Seattle. So here's Rich yesterday. He's been asked about the injuries at linebacker and how he's trying to overcome those. And you knew that going into this, he wanted to fire off some salvos. So here you go.
I just found out, we can get on my soapbox here. I just found out that the next game is going to be at Washington at 8 o'clock at night. So we'll get back 5 in the morning. I just don't understand, you know, how this happens. We play 12 straight, and then you play night road games, and then we're going to play an 8 o'clock road game at Washington, get back 5 in the morning, and then have to go back on the road again. If the conference is really concerned about student-athlete welfare, I think something should be stepped in because, you know, when do a guys get a chance to get healthy? You're not getting treatments on planes. You're not getting, you know, they could try to sleep, but you're not getting a whole lot of rest when you're traveling. It's just ridiculous, in my opinion. But
Okay, so he's right. He's dead flat right. As Sean Miller has been on a rant about the scheduling as well. I don't know. I've heard that Greg Byrne has been very vocal about his lack of happiness with the Pac-12 network. And I have to believe that there are people in the offices. It's like when Frieder was at ASU, U of A always got the Thursday game in Pullman. And then they'd get to Seattle on Saturday, and ASU would get like the they'd get like the 9 or 10 o'clock at night game in Pullman and be stuck there till Sunday night, and the plane would get delayed and the kids wouldn't get back till Monday. And this is when Tom Dillon and I were doing the games, and Bill always felt that the conference kind of had it in for him. I don't know if there's something there. I don't know if you can tie all of them together. Sean's been outspoken about it. Greg's not been happy about it. Now they're sticking it to Rich, because that is sticking it to him. And it's just a fact. All right, Peter King is next. We will, the Monday Morning Quarterback, SI.com, Sunday Night Football on NBC Insider. Peter King joins us via Skype from New York next. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, Peter King joins us now as we talk about all things around the National Football League. The Cardinals have the Ravens this coming Monday. Peter joins us via Skype from New York City. The MMQB every week. It's great to hook up with Peter. The undefeated teams, I'm curious right off the top, who are you a believer in? Who are you not a believer in?
Well, Brad, I think that be hard not to be a believer in, you know, obviously you're a believer in the Patriots. I'd say probably the team that I'm a little skeptical about right now, you know, I'm skeptical about the Denver Broncos. It's crazy to say that, obviously, when they're 6-0, you got Peyton Manning as your quarterback and you got a top three defense in the NFL, but Peyton Manning has become a liability, and never thought I'd say that, but they're winning in spite of Peyton Manning right now. And look, we have a story on our site on the MMQB today by Robert Klemko, who's got some staunch defense from guys in Manning's locker room in Denver. Basically, leave our quarterback alone. We're 6-0. You know, there's a lot of people who'd like to have our quarterback right now. So anyway, the bottom line is he's not playing well. His arm is either shot or bordering on shot, and they simply have to get more done with the tight end position. I think Owen Daniels, it's good for him to have a week, this bye week, to get healthy, and their offensive line simply has to be better. I mean, C.J. Anderson was 4.5 a carry a year ago. He's 2.7 a carry now. That is a gigantic factor in Denver's struggles on offense.
Yeah, Peter, one note on the Broncos. It's Brock Osweiler, who people are very familiar with here in Arizona, who left Arizona State very early after Dennis Erickson got blown out, wanting to have Brock Osweiler step in for Peyton Manning. The delicacy of that situation when your team is undefeated, and yet here you are, somebody who's seen the National Football League for many, many years. How much off his fastball has Peyton Manning lost?
To me, it's like, you know, and again, it's like if you were Matt Harvey and you threw 98 and all of a sudden you came back the next year and you were trying to get by with all off-speed stuff and your fastball is down to 87. Mm. That's what he is right now. But look, I'm not in general sort of a revolutionary type of guy when it comes to lineup changes. And look, if the Broncos were 2-4 right now and Manning had the worst touchdown to interception ratio in the league, then I might say might be time to go to Osweiler. Mm-hmm. The problem is, at least in my opinion, is nobody has any idea if Osweiler can do it.
Right.
And it'd be different if your backup quarterback was Mike Vick or you know, a guy who'd started 50 or 75 or 100 games. You sort of knew what you were getting. It'd be even different if you had Matt Cassel, even though he hasn't been a great player, but you know what you're getting. I just think that the thought of playing Brock Osweiler now and inserting him on a 6-0 team, especially you come off the bye. And again, not that you have to make lineup decisions because of this. you want Brock Osweiler to go head to head coming out of the bye against Aaron Rodgers and then at Andrew Luck? I wouldn't if I were the Denver Broncos.
Peter King joining us via Skype from New York City, the MMQB. Great content there, day in and day out, to check out several times per day. On the Cardinals end of things, so losing at Pittsburgh to a third-string quarterback, there's been some panic in the streets out here. It is losing to Pittsburgh, a very good team. Now they have a spot in their schedule where the Ravens have not played well at all, and then they have the Browns and then the bye week. What do you make out of the Cardinals after the Pittsburgh loss?
Well, I was surprised. I was particularly surprised that they scored 13 points. And I think Pittsburgh now, what I take out of that game is Pittsburgh defense better than I think most people thought. Landry Jones better than most people thought. Brad, you've seen 100 times more of Landry Jones than I have because I'm not a big college football watcher. Hmm. But he played very well. And I'm just telling you, having been to Steelers camp this past summer, Landry Jones was not even a lock to make this roster. So I think the fact that he played and played well is a huge bonus for Pittsburgh. And as far as Arizona goes, look, I think that, you know, the two things I noticed coming out of that game is that, look, against Detroit, they had an excellent day running the ball. Mm-hmm. And against Pittsburgh, they had a lousy day running the ball. And I think that has something to do with the defense you're playing, obviously. But Carson Palmer is not to the stage of his career, and, you know, hardly any quarterback ever would be, where if it's always second and nine, second and eight, that you're going to be in good shape. And I think Carson Palmer needs the help of his running game, and I think that would be the focus. I mean, if I'm Bruce Arians this week at practice, that would be the focus going into Baltimore and then going against Cleveland. We simply have to run the ball better.
It seems to me, Peter, that with the way the schedule is, where it is going soft right now with the next couple of weeks, these are games you have to win, even though Cleveland is on the road. Then they have the bye week. They follow that with Seattle and Cincinnati. So I'm still on this side of the fence of, I'm not sure that this is a great team out here yet, because the two teams that are good that they've played have beaten them. So,
right. And I mean, Brad, look, they could be 6-2 very easily going into their bye.
Sure.
If they're 6-2 going into their bye, then you're at CenturyLink, which I don't care what anybody says. I don't care. And I saw, you know, on Sunday, I saw Cam Newton in the last 8 minutes of that game go 80 yards twice on the Seattle Seahawks to beat the Seahawks. That to me is amazing. But what I was going to say is, I don't care what anybody says, that's still a formidable road trip, no matter what happens. Sure. No matter whether Seattle loses against the 49ers this week. I mean, I still think that that's a very, very tough game they have coming up. And then obviously Cincinnati to me is that is one of the great stories of this season, the fact that Andy Dalton arguably is playing better than any quarterback in football. It's crazy, absolutely crazy to think he's on a par right now with Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers for the first 6 weeks. Nobody would have figured that, but it's true.
Let you go off that, Peter. Appreciate the insight as always. Thanks.
All the best, Brad. Thank you.
All right, let's dig deeper into the disappointing season that is Arizona State football with Chris Cartman, SunDevilSource.com, one of the best in the business. If I told you that we're sitting in the middle of October and they'd be out of the Pac-12 South race back in July, would you have bought into that?
I'd be surprised. I thought the team would probably be a 5-2 at this point, maybe 6-1 if things kind of went well. The offense hasn't come together and allowed the rest of the team to operate the capacity that Todd Graham has really wanted. The thing about Todd Graham is he's a superlative talker, sets really high goals. I don't know if they're necessarily always realistic goals, but that's the way he is. So that's the way the fans anticipate and expect the season to kind of be. And when you don't have that type of success, this is kind of going to be the byproduct of that.
Okay, let's go right down the list. Mike Norvell under heavy scrutiny from the fans. I even hear on campus there's some concern about his play calling. What do you see?
It's deserved. deserved. The problem is that Mike Bercovici isn't necessarily the quarterback that fits their system all that well. But you're not going to recruit to a different system for a 1 year where you have a quarterback that they didn't necessarily even recruit. I think the other quarterbacks that they have that are in the pipeline are more in line with the type of offense that they want to run. So what you have is a bunch of jagged pieces that don't necessarily all fit together. The DJ Foster move, DeMario Richard getting hurt, they had injuries. Some of the veteran players aren't making plays. Cody Cole drop in the end zone. He had another drop earlier in the season that was pretty substantial. DJ Foster had a drop in the end zone. Mm-hmm. So I think that can't happen when you need those guys to perform at a high level to give you the type of success that you want to. When you're talking about a 15 wins, 14 wins type of thing, which is what was the goals that were set out.
See, and I look at it, Chris, and look at the game the other night at Utah, and it wasn't Mike Norvell that was dropping balls. There right. were a lot of drop balls. But it's also pretty apparent to me that maybe they overestimated what Mike Bercovici is able to do.
Yes, there's a lack, to me though, there's a lack of creativity in some of the play calling. Yes, you're going to need to run some run replacement screens, but you need to do that in a more creative fashion. They tried that against Utah. A couple of those were really snuffed out very easily. The way that they were running the football, they weren't blocking the zone read. So if you're going to do that, then you have to be able to run the ball inside. So their veteran offensive line has not gotten the job done. They have three senior returning offensive starters in the middle. Those guys haven't outperformed USC or UCLA, really. Utah, certainly not Texas A&M. They need a better performance from those guys to take more pressure off of Mike Bercovici. Mike Bercovici is the type of guy where he needs the pieces around him. He needs to be able to throw the ball vertically. They don't have those vertical components. And so when you look at what he's capable of and the play calling and the running game, all of that stuff is just not totally meshing in a way that enables their offense to be successful enough.
Is DJ Foster happy?
I think DJ Foster is smart enough to know that he's not going to be a full-time running back in the NFL. And so what needs to happen for him is he needs to show versatility. At the end of the day, really, he's like this Joker-type player in the NFL where you motion him a lot. You use him like some of the personnel in Seattle or Green Bay. So I think he knows that. He's not been successful enough. I'm wondering if he's even 100% healthy because he's taken a few shots that have been pretty substantial, and he hasn't been necessarily operating, to me, to my eye, at 100% out there at times.
Okay, is it time for Todd Graham to start playing Manny Wilkins in packages to get ready for next season? Is it time to get him out on the field for 8, 10, 12 snaps per game?
I'm actually not a big believer in that. And I think most of your improvement comes in the practice setting as opposed to really in games. Sure, maybe you can tailor a package to run for Manny Wilkins. But what are you saying ultimately to Mike Bercovici when you do that, given the fact that you called him your best leader that you've ever probably had? You're still trying to compete to win. Now, if you look at 4 years ago, ASU was 3-0 in 2011. They go up, they beat Utah, put them in a great position. They fall apart, and they end up getting Dennis Erickson fired that year, right? So you don't know for sure that you're out of the race. A two-team, three-way tie where you have three teams with two losses, mm-hmm. that's very possible. It's mm-hmm. not out of the question. Utah could lose to USC. They lose another game. Maybe ASU runs the table. They have an easier part of the schedule now. Oregon's reeling. Washington State. So you can't all of a sudden just say, okay, we're going to throw Manny Wilkins out there right now. Maybe if you lose another game, then maybe you start to look at maybe doing some different things to start to get ready. I don't think you're at that point yet.
Best team that I've seen in the Pac-12 South is USC, top to bottom. When I look at Utah at home, and I take the Oregon game and obviously beating Michigan, but I still think Utah, that was a winnable game for ASU by a long, long ways Saturday night.
They're up 18-14 going into the fourth quarter. They had a really bad sequence, fair catch, bad play call on second down, and then a horrible punt gives Utah a short field. They score a touchdown, and then the rails fell off. I don't think Utah is a top three team in the country.
No.
There's no way. Utah, you put them in the SEC West, they're not even probably the third team.
No, you're right.
But the reality is that you got there, you won. ASU is better than its record indicates, but that doesn't matter because you have to win the games ultimately.
Sure.
USC, as you said, is by far the most talented team, but they've had a turmoil type of a season, tumultuous. I don't think Steve Sarkisian's the best coach. Helton is a much better play caller than Sarkisian when he's able to do it. I think they easily could go on a run now that Sarkisian's kind of out of the picture. Maybe they beat Utah, they get some momentum. So we're going to have to see that the second half of this thing could get really interesting. Don't even be surprised if a team like Arizona wins a few games in a row and is still there in the hunt late. I mean, that's what kind of happened last year. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of ways this thing could still play out. Utah is a really good football team, but they're going to play in a lot of tight games given their style.
He is Chris Cartman with sundevilsource.com. Thanks for coming in. It's Chris Cartman with us earlier. During that interview that just ran, on Twitter just popped up from Chris Dufresne, who's one of the best writers in college football across the country. And Kyle Whittingham is on a conference call right now, the head coach at Utah, with the LA media. Utah plays at USC this week. And Whittingham said he's not going to speculate on the USC job. Quote, why speculate on speculation? He just told the LA Times, Gary Klein. So, and Gary Klein, very good too. The conference, the Pac-12 South, boy, if I'm a football fan within this conference, like if I'm an Arizona fan, I control my own destiny. All U of A has to do is win their games, okay? And they need help with Utah losing a game because U of A still plays Utah. If I'm Arizona State, I need a bunch of help. I need a bunch of help. In fact, this weekend, I guess I would want USC to win this weekend to beat Utah. And then I would be cheering if I'm Todd Graham is going to have to be cheering for Rich Rod at some point, and Rich Rod's going to have to be cheering for Todd Graham in this last month of the season. U of A fans and ASU fans are going to have to be cheering for one another. And I know you all hate that, but this is reality. If you want to be part of the national title, okay, it's going to be really hard for a Pac-12 team, other than, I believe, Stanford or Utah, to make it all the way in to the Final Four.
And that's a problem when you lose to teams above you. They have the tiebreaker, so you need them not only to be – you need them to essentially lose an extra game because if it's a tie, Utah will get the tiebreaker over ASU and USC will get the tiebreaker over ASU.
Well, but you look at Utah's schedule. Okay, so they have USC, they have UCLA, and they have Arizona still. Those are three games they could lose.
Especially since the true Oregon is starting to show its colors. I mean, Oregon is just a shell of what we thought Oregon was going to be. Not to take, I mean, going to Eugene and winning and winning the way they did is certainly impressive. But every passing week that Oregon struggles, like they did last week up at Washington, is a clear indicator that maybe that win wasn't as impressive as everyone
thought. Well, and it's like if you took the Pac-12 South, at the start of the year, there's this conversation, this narrative that the Pac-12 South, and we're going to have Brock Huard on with us tomorrow. I'm going to talk to Brock about this. Brock's been traveling to outposts all over the place, but he's been in the SEC for the most part, right? Or is it ACC?
Everywhere. He did an Arkansas-Texas Tech game. He was in Tallahassee last week. He's been did a couple ACC games.
Okay, so maybe I won't get one.
But he's got his finger on the pulse of what's going on in the Pac-12.
But I think the Pac-12 South maybe isn't as good top to bottom. And if you did put some of these teams over in the SEC this year, like I think Texas A&M, even though they lost to Alabama and Alabama ran all over Texas A&M, I still think Texas A&M and Utah on a neutral site, Texas A&M wins.
I agree.
Okay. TCU, here's your team. Okay. So let's just look at from this perspective. TCU plays Utah on a neutral site. I think TCU wins.
I think Utah wins.
Really?
Yeah. I think the storm is coming for TCU. They're so beat up, and their defense is just – they're playing a bunch of kids. And their remaining schedule is West Virginia, Oklahoma State, Kansas, which is a win, and then at Oklahoma and then home to Baylor. They're just not going to run the table. It's not going to happen.
Well, they're not going to run the table, but
– I mean, I think they're going to lose two or three games.
Okay, so you don't think they're going to play here?
No, I don't.
So, and this is the conversation for the champ game, for the mm-hmm. Final Four on New Year's Eve.
I can't see anyone beating Baylor, as much as that pains me. I can't see
that
happening.
But do you see a team within the Pac-12? Like Cal plays UCLA tomorrow night. UCLA, it'll be interesting to me to see if Cal runs the football tomorrow night. Because
Thursday
night, I'm sorry, yeah. Cal plays UCLA Thursday. Jared Goff didn't have a great game at Utah.
Mm-mm.
But UCLA's defense is so bad, all you have to do is turn around, hand the football off, and run. But does Cal have the ability to run the football versus just give it to Goff and have him throw? Can Cal beat Stanford when they play one another at the end of the season? Even the ASU at Cal game, the week after the U of A game.
Tricky game for ASU.
Well, it
road
may...
game after the teacup, tricky.
Well, and there may be nothing on the line for them.
Yeah.
There may be... Either you're going to go to El Paso or San Diego or nothing. You know, it may be one of those games. But I think there's a shot, Eric, that the Pac-12 gets shut out. because Ohio State or Michigan State or even Michigan, I cannot see Iowa making it. I can't. Iowa in the playoff?
They would have to beat either Sparty or Michigan or Ohio State in the championship game, in the Big Ten championship game, and I just can't see that happening.
You think Baylor's going to make it?
So either
Baylor. So Baylor's one team that's in. You'd have to believe either Ohio State or Michigan or Michigan State. So there's two.
Don't sleep on Bama. One loss.
So then you go to Alabama, right? So you go to the SEC. There's three. Now I'm sitting here looking at the Pac-12 with all the cannibalism going on, or is it not cannibalism? Is it just maybe these teams aren't that good? Like, I think Utah is not that good. And when they play USC this week, if they go and blow them out, then I'm dead flat wrong. And I'll sit here and say it, okay? But I look at Stanford as the team that, to me, is head and shoulders better than any team that I've seen.
And the committee's going to have
conference.
To. Well, the committee's going to have to decide, Brad. There's all these wild card teams out there. Notre Dame, one loss. Clemson, undefeated. I mean, if they're matching up resumes, and you talk about the cannibalism in the Pac-12, is it, okay, a one-loss Pac-12 team is better than an undefeated Clemson or a one-loss Notre Dame?
But
and
Notre
that's
Dame's
a tough decision.
But
because
Notre Dame still has Stanford to play.
There's
a playoff game right there. That is a true playoff game.
And last year proved that the playoff committee wants the marquee schools. Clearly, Florida State was not one of the four best teams last year. Yet, they made the playoffs.
Because
they went undefeated, and they're Florida State.
You know, I got invited to go to that mock selection thing 2 weeks ago, but it was on my wife's 50th.
Yeah.
I should have gone, huh?
No.
Wife's 50th.
I'm not getting caught up in all that playoff stuff this year. It's just a
really?
That's
because you're a bitter TCU fan.
It's just
fan.
A ratings thing.
You're just a negative Nelly. You're just...
Sure.
What's your deal?
Wouldn't you?
Yeah,
wouldn't you? But you win your last game 55-3, and you drop from third to sixth.
But if you look at and I know we got to take a break here, but if you look at where U of A is, let's just go to U of A for a minute. U of A still is in a tremendous spot because they do have SC and Utah and ASU still to play.
But I think the storm is coming in Tucson. Well, only because, Brad, no bye week. Eventually, I mean, they're losing bodies left and right, and there's no recovery time.
Well, and when Rich was complaining about his schedule earlier, he comes off that Washington game with USC the next week.
At USC. So they have to go all the way up to the Northwest.
Fly to Seattle. Yeah.
Come back at 5 in the morning on Sunday, and then go back to LA the next week.
Right.
Tough.
And then you have Utah the following week. And then you have ASU the week after that.
I can't see them surviving that stretch.
I can't either, but they have it in front of them. That's the thing. ASU does not have it in front of them. ASU has, what is it? They have Oregon next week. They have Washington State the week after that. They have Washington the week after that. None of those games are going to help them.
And then U of A and then Cal.
U of A and Cal. So they only have one game left within the South. Mm-hmm. So all they can do is sit and hope and pray along the sidelines that these teams all beat up one another. Back with more after this timeout. So I have a couple of things coming up, and I better bring Eric in on this. I was going to get into Patino today because Patino is all over the place, the prostitutes with college basketball players. Shocking. Stunning.
I'm becoming numb to these stories.
Really?
Because it's happening more and more and more.
When I was doing games with Tom during the Frieder era, I mean, and it wasn't just ASU. I mean, it wasn't strippers or prostitutes.
Make sure
this guy has a good time when he's
course.
In Tempe.
Yeah,
it
was just Headache Smith and everything that went along with Headache Smith, both
and that was
on
a headache.
And off the court.
So. That was a headache. So I have a couple things I got to run by you on the air here. I got an invite to the James Bond premiere, and you know how I am about Bond. It's a 10 a.m. on a show day. Do I blow off the show? Do I go see Bond?
No, they're going to have to just move the screening.
They have to move the screening. Okay. So
Tom, you can make it by noon.
I can make it by noon.
Maybe 11:30, depending on where it
is. So I can't blow off work to go to see Bond.
10 a.m. screening?
10 a.m. screening.
Who does that?
I get lots of those, but I'm not, you know, I have to ask for
permission. That's a big movie. You can't slide that thing at like 6 o'clock at night or 7:30?
Well, there's one the next night, but I want to go see it the day that it comes out. So
you're going to have to go to the night show.
All right.
Sorry.
There's that. This weekend, I have been informed that I have been selected to be water polo dad. So my 10-year-old, who's about to turn 11, has taken up the sport of water polo. And I understand that I have to learn how to keep score for water polo.
That's now, easy.
Is it easy?
Sure.
I've never done it.
It's like soccer in the water.
Is that it?
I think so.
I hear that it's not.
Okay.
I'm just been, because that's what I thought. And they said, no, there's substitutions and there's penalties and there's timing. And I'm thinking that I may come in next Monday.
Well, clarify yourself. Is it keeping score or is it like?
Well, it's all that stuff.
Oh, okay.
If you're the
you said keeping
table,
score, so it's easy. Like it's
yeah,
easy
no,
to keep
no,
score.
No, it's not. It's not. Here's a shot, and you.
Gotcha.
You know, it's not goal.
Gotcha. So you have to like keep the assists and the
I
penalty
have to keep all
minutes
this stuff.
And all that.
So I may come in next Monday.
There's a YouTube video out there on. I'm sure.
Really grumpy, or fired. They may just fire me and tell me you're the dad that gets out. They may put me in the orange vest and say, "Go be the marshal with these drunk, crazy water polo parents because you're tall." I don't know. I'm just giving you some advice. And okay. Those are you guys too that take in the show every day. There's days I come in here, I'm just a bear to be around. And more often than not, it's Eric that's a pain in the ass.
Indeed.
But I'm not going to be good. So I've got a couple things going on personally. You're just killing me on bond, and I'm going to be water polo dad this weekend. So got that coming up too. On a serious note, tonight, I'm on the Mets-Cubs tonight. There's nothing on TV. Oh, it's Tuesday. My wife is into CSI. So we'll have that fight. We'll have that battle.
Yeah, I'll be watching the Cubs game.
Yeah, I may watch some of the Coyotes. They have New Jersey tonight.
That'll be a good game. They're on the road. First big road trip of the season.
Shane Doan is playing his 1,400th game.
It's crazy.
And when you think about the all-time great athletes in our state, okay, I don't like to use the Mount Rushmore because everybody's done that. That's an old bit. But Shane Doan, for having gone through all of the horrible ownership issues that he's had to endure, and I know people say, well, yeah, he's paid a whole lot of money. But look, if you are if you're a true pro and you walk in every day to do your job and do it to the best of your ability and you know you're going to get your head kicked in every day, you just know it. You're the Washington Generals. And that's really what the Coyotes have been to a certain extent the last few years. And every day you walk in and guys like me come up to you and say, how's it going? Well, how do you think it's going? We've lost 10 in a row or 12 in a row. I'm playing with all these kids. We may move. We may not move. We have a new owner. They're going to put me on a billboard. Well, no, now they need to figure out some new faces of the franchise. So now I'm going to be over here for a little bit. He's never said this to me, but it's very apparent that I've had some people at the organization that have come and gone. Oh, we need to find another face along with Shane. Someday Shane's not going to be here, and every franchise has to have a face of the franchise. I happen to agree with that. Now, like the face of the franchise with the Cardinals is Fitz and Carson and Calais, and it's on a first-name basis. It's Doaner if you're with the Coyotes. If you're with the Suns right now, there is no face of the franchise. It's not Bledsoe. It's your coach.
It's not Mark Keefe.
It's not Keefe. We got Keefe. Keefe doesn't even want to be here. And if it's the Diamondbacks, it's Goldie. They go by nicknames. It's Goldschmidt. I'm not big on the whole nickname thing. But Shane Doan, for everything that he goes through, is probably the most underappreciated athlete. We take him for granted. If we need to go get a soundbite after the game, it's Shane Doan. If we want a guest from the Coyotes and we can talk to Shane directly, we'll get Shane Doan. If there's a charity event going on around the valley or around the state, Shane Doan is usually with it. Shane Doan does a lot of things for kids that nobody ever hears about. And he's terrific. It's not like he's just a shell of himself. So they play tonight, and the Suns play tonight at San Antonio in a preseason game. Not that I care, but they do play, and some of you do. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. TV show tomorrow night on Fox Sports Arizona, following the Coyotes game and at 10 o'clock. I'm Brad Sussmat.